You know, we obviously, you know, we had a very emotional day. You know, it's not an excuse for how we played. You know, it's the worst game we played all year, in my opinion. You know, it's something where, you know, I hope what happened this morning has long-term benefits for our team. You know, it's something where, you know, we got to get back together. We got to work. We got to regroup. We got to find a way to come together. We have a really tough game because the team is playing really good basketball right now on Sunday in our getaway game before we hit the road for six. You know, we got to find a way to get back together and put this one behind us, and again, hopefully, stay together as a team moving forward.
That's Fred Hoiberg. He'll inspire you. That's wrong. Don't do that, Mark Carmen. Very inappropriate. I'm Mark Carmen.
15 yards for piling on.
Yeah, that's wrong. Harry Tynowitz here. Dan Long producing the program. Thanks for jumping on. 720 WGN checking us out on a Saturday afternoon. Sam Smith, Bulls.com, has been covering Bulls games since the Bulls were invented, joining us now. And, Sam, I know you've seen worse games this year. You wrote about it. I mean, Wednesday's game against Atlanta, where they somehow came from behind or came from ahead to lose, I mean, that was a worse game, right?
Well, that was a bad ending. Milwaukee back-to-back last month when they lost by like 50. I mean, that was a pretty bad game.
Both of them.
And so, you know, it's like a beauty contest. There are several to choose from there. I think it was, I don't correct Fred Hoiberg that way, but I think he probably meant something. It was the worst, the worst game of the games they really wanted to win because of what happened, you know, the last couple of days, that the only way to get past this kind of stuff is to win a game. And once you win a game, you know, everybody's talking about how great things went and they did, yeah, they did. And, you know, we've seen this with the Bulls all through the night. Heck, you know, we saw this, like I said, you know, with, I wasn't exactly there for all those games, but, you know, Dick Motta blistering the entire team, you know, saying that Chet Walker, Bob Love, and Norm Van Leer don't belong in the NBA and, you know, are losers. I mean, you know, so it's a misdemeanor comparatively. But, yeah, they just, you know, I think he wanted that win probably individually more than any other game this season.
Right.
And I think that's why he looked so, you know, so beaten and down after that, you know, he needed to get past this one as soon as possible.
Yeah, I watched him walk out of the locker room to go down to do the press conference, and he just looked completely beside himself. And then, Sam, we were standing there next to Jimmy Butler, and it was relayed to him that Fred called it the worst game of the year, and then he said this.
I don't think that was our worst game of the season either. I definitely don't think so. You know, it's another loss at home. Correct it tomorrow, man, and get ready for somebody on Sunday.
So, and he said it. Sammy was smiling. He was like, he thought it was like kind of humorous. And so, I guess my question to you is: has Fred Hoiberg lost the team, or at least most of the team?
No, actually, I think Jimmy was fine. He was just, you know, I thought Wade was the guy who was the problem there. You know, he went into Rasheed Wallace mode with one word, you know, short answers. You know. Everybody played hard. He got asked three different questions and asked them the same way about, you know, that's a good team over there or something like that. I mean, he's been the most voluble guy all season, you know, open and charming and articulate, and he just shut down, you know. And then he was asked that same question. You know, every media went around to each guy and said, Fred said it's the worst game. What do you think? Nobody said it wasn't except him, and Wade just go, because he was doing the one-word answer thing. He said, yeah, just didn't say anything else. So, you know, he was right in the middle of all this. You know, the losing the team thing is, you know, I know it's an easy thing to say when things are not, you know, are not going well. But the one thing that stands out to me, and not to, you know, take the responsibility away from the coach, is that when you hire Hall of Fame and all-star championship level players, you can't lose that team because they have to be responsible for that team as much as you. You know, you hired those players, you know, they want to, they call themselves as coach on the floor and, you know, locker room, you know, locker room leaders and all that stuff. Well, you know, if you're going to be that, you got to keep this from happening. This is on you as much as it's on the coach. You know, we've heard it many times. Phil said it. Chuck Daly, Chuck Daly's the first one I heard say it. Popovich says it all the time. I'm able to be a great coach because Isaiah Thomas let me coach, because Tim Duncan let me coach,
right?
Because Michael Jordan let me coach. If your best guys won't let you coach, you know, if they're going to do what other things are contrary, there's no coach. You know, Bill Russell was the most devoted guy to Red Auerbach, and he delivered Red Auerbach's message right to the players as if it was being said by Red Auerbach. And so it was clear when your best player says that. I'm not saying that you can't always blame the coach when you have guys like that. It's one thing if you're the Sixers and, you know, everybody is 16 years old. No, that's why you got to put veterans on the team. But when you do put those veterans on the team, they can't absolve themselves of responsibility when these sort of things happen.
So, Sam, in other words, if coach said time out and Jimmy Butler were to say no and take the ball and go down court and score, that would be not letting a guy coach.
Well, I've seen this many times. I it's interesting. I was talking with Mark Schanowski about that last night because it wasn't on the broadcast. You know, we get the monitor to feed during the game, and I didn't see that. And so I asked him about that. I said, was that on your broadcast? And he said, you know, it looked to me like it was pieced together from two things. Now, I'm not saying it didn't occur. I didn't see it. You know, what I saw Fred signaling for the timeout, but I looked and I know they only had one timeout, and it was still. So, you know, Fred's explanation was, I changed my mind or whatever. But the point is, I saw Michael Jordan do that. I've seen every great player say no, you know, and played through a timeout call and finished. You know, I don't see that as an act of mutiny at the end of a game. Now, if, you know, I saw the clip to me didn't match the circumstance, you know, the turnaround. So I don't know. Why I'd have to see that in context, because in the internet now and in our era of fake news and alternate facts and all this sort of stuff gets pieced together. And if you take it off the internet, you know, you either run the risk of being wrong or president of the United States. Sure. So, you know, so I'm withholding judgment on that because I didn't see that, but I have seen players, great players, and justifiably blow off a coach at that time. And, you know, because they're saying, look, I see something that you don't see. And the truth is, the game is way overcoached, and that the players should be making a lot of these decisions on the court because they're in the game, you know, and there's been too much play calling. Fred, it was interesting. Fred came in with the notion of, you know, Tom called everything and we walked it up and all this sort of stuff. So we're going to, you know, move it out and we're going to push through. And Fred's going to leave it to the players to make more play calls. And, well, you know, that sort of unraveled because they didn't want to. And so he's gone back to making more play calls, which I don't think is great. But they have, you know, they didn't respond when they gave him the freedom. And he gave him the freedom, you know, and then everyone said, well, he's not coaching. You know, so I'm not completely absolving him, you know, because of, you know, sort of the dysfunction in different cases. But, you know, in that particular case, I've seen that before, and it's not, you know, it's not the ultimate indictment.
Sam Smith, Bulls.com, wrote the Jordan Rules. First person to ever say anything negative about Michael Jordan. I wanted to kill him at the time. But I love you now, Sam. So, hey.
Where were you then?
I was a little younger then. I didn't have access to you,
exactly.
You know. So, what happens at the trade deadline, Sam? What are they going to do?
Well, we got another month. I'm predicting they do something. So I usually don't know, and I still don't know, because it obviously depends. I mean, to me, it's irrelevant, essentially, because, you know, when you deal at the trade deadline, you're dealing from weakness, because you've got, like, you know, six teams or something that, you know, the only teams that basically deal at the trade deadline are teams that, you know, are going to rip you off, or the two or three teams that think they have a chance to, you know, do something in the playoffs or something. You know, when you get to, you know, June, you know, in the draft and all, 29 teams realize they're not good enough, and it opens it up. And so that's when I think there would be more. I think there's a possibility they could, you know, do something with a guy, you know, I mean, not that I'm advocating it, but, you know, it's Taj Gibson. I mean, it's been out there. Taj Gibson's last season, he would be valuable to a contending team because he's a veteran player that you could plug into the playoffs. You know, these young players wouldn't be for the most part because, you know, you can't put them into the second round of the playoffs and say, you know, all right, make a big play down the stretch. But, you know, with matching salaries and, you know, because if you're a good team, you can't give up from your core. So how are you going to match his salary? You know, what are you going to give? Draft picks are more valuable now because of the new collective bargaining agreement, which is going to limit free agent movement. And teams are more reluctant to give up number one picks. You know, everyone's saying, well, you know, LeBron wants to do something. Cavs, well, because of the things they've done already, they don't have a pick they can give up until 2021. And most of the GMs will be fired by then, so they don't want that pick. And so, yeah, it's hard to do. And so, you know, I think there's a chance they can do something. I don't think it'll be a major thing.
Sam, he just called out his two-star players on Instagram, and he has aggravated a lot of other coaches in the league. But he's shown a willingness to work with young players, and Hoiberg just complimented Rondo on how he has dealt with this situation. What trade value does Rajon Rondo have? Do other teams want him?
No. And that's the other point, too. He doesn't have any trade value because he's on an expiring contract, essentially. He's got a small, you know, buyout for next season. Not small to us, but, you know, small in the sport relative things. And, you know, sort of the style of ball he plays is a unique thing. They say, oh, well, the Cavs need a backup point guard. LeBron's been screaming, oh, get me a backup point guard. Well, he's not what fits them because, you know, they need sort of, you know, John Paxson sort of backup point guard, a guy who could spread the court, shoot the ball. You know, Rondo sort of controls the ball and is not a good shooter, although he shot well last night. You know, that's sort of the funhouse mirror effect of this thing. You know, the adult in the room, more than anybody, has been Rajon Rondo.
Right, yeah.
He hasn't been the rally. He's the one who stood up and said, you know what, you guys are doing crazy stuff. I gotta protect the kids. You know, I got to protect the future of the franchise. You know, so he's not the fall. And because of his contract, it's $14 million for 1 year. It's valuable to have for in case you want to do something valuable, and because it has the carryover the next season. It actually was a smart contract to have signed because it gives you a lot of flexibility to make a trade. If you want to get young players, like say the Bulls want to, you know, strip down, get, you know, and go in a young direction like the Sox, you know, whatever, Cubs, you know, whatever, Sixers, hopefully not that. But, you know, you got to match salaries when you trade. So to get a young player, you know, makes $4 million on a first-round pick, you know, that having that money, that extra 14 to match up to, you know, taking on another contract with it, you know, to exchange, it makes it valuable. So I actually think Rondo's one of the more valuable players for them because I think his contract is good to keep around because it'll give you a lot more flexibility if you want to do something major. Like, if you ever wanted to do something with Wade or Jimmy Butler or one of your higher salaried guys, you know, it helps having some money around, and then you could add up pieces, make a third team, you know, any number of things you can do.
They got to make a deal with the Boston Celtics, Sam. The Celtics have Brooklyn's 2017 pick. In 2018, they have another pick from Brooklyn, and they have the Clippers' first-round draft pick in 2019, Memphis' first-round pick in 2019. The Celtics are within shouting distance of the Cavaliers. To me, it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense to a lot of people other than the Celtics, which is probably the problem. I think the Celtics thing is, and we've all heard about, you know, their interest in Gordon Hayward, who's a free agent this summer and played for Brad Stevens in college. And, you know, the kind of a wing player that is missing on the Boston roster. So, you know, the notion has been that they don't, that they're probably not good enough now to beat the Cavs if they make a change in midseason, a major change of any sort. And so why bother, you know, make your run for Hayward? And if you could do that, then you can parlay those picks into something else you need, either a veteran or if you want to take the player or something. So, all the indications you get is that Boston is in no hurry to do anything and is not really dangling either of those, any of those picks.
That's fine. Go get Gordon Hayward. Let's make the deal in the summer. If you had Hayward and Jimmy, they actually really have a shot.
Couple all-stars. Sam, I want to wake up the morning after a Bulls game and read about how Bobby Portis was playing great. Not that he's going to go play for the Windy City Bulls.
Yeah.
Where are you at with Bobby Portis? Is the jury still out on him? Can he be a player in the association?
Yeah, I think so, because you can't make a judgment on how little he's played yet. You know, there are a couple of guys, you know, you need to get in there. And, you know, part of, and that's been, you know, a difficult situation for the coach to manage. You know, he's essentially been given, you know, and he removed Rondo. He cut Rondo's minutes and sort of moved them back now a little bit, because, you know, Rondo does fit with, you know. And that was the other thing, too. They expected Mirotić to win the starting power forward job, and so you'd have, you know, some shooting coming off, and, you know, Rondo would work better with that, you know, to penetrate, pitch, and all that sort of stuff. But then once Taj was obviously far better, and, you know, you can't have a competition and then award it to the job to the guy who lost. And so, you know, now you had all these guys who were not great perimeter shooters, so it sort of limited Rondo, obviously. You know, but then, you know, if Jimmy's going to play big minutes and he's your best player and he's deserving of that, and, you know, you're still trying to win the games, you know, there's a balance between doing these things. You know, but Valentine hasn't played. I'd like to see Valentine. Right. I think he, you know, they sent him to play in Hoffman Estates tonight. Bill Cartwright's going to be there, I know, making a speech, too. So I think that'll be good to see.
I love Bill Cartwright.
But, you know, Fred has done, you know, a reasonable enough job in getting a lot of these guys out there. We've seen a lot of, you know, Grant is, you know, people want to say, well, can Grant play? And, you know, he's been starting, and he's been out there playing some. Obviously, you got to, you know, try Mirotić, McDermott. Felicio has gotten a lot of minutes, sort of worked his way in. Carter Williams was playing. So, you know, I'd still like to see Portis in a sustained run. And given the fact that, you know, second year, it's still time, I wouldn't give up on him. But at the same time, you know, and that's another reason why, you know, you can make a case and say, okay, well, you know, if we could move Gibson to a contender and we can slip Portis out there, but at the same time, you're not going to win as many games, you know, because, you know, Gibson is better and he does more things now, and he's a veteran and he understands how to play, and this kid's learning how to play. So, you know, it's a balancing act, and you can't play 15 guys or 14. You don't want to. And so, you know, teams play, if you look at the box scores and all the other teams, they're only playing 9 or 10 guys. And so, you know, it's all you can do. And if you've still got, you know, if you've still got the roster you've got with Wade, you know, you're not benching him. Jimmy, you know, Lopez is your starting center. Gibson, you know, he's given Zipser. I mean, none of us expected to see Gibson. I even asked Foreman at the press conference last summer, you know, when Zipser was signed, I said, what are you doing? He's going to be in the Windy City all season. What's he on the roster for? And so I never expected to see him. And, you know, he's had some good games. So I think Fred has gotten a lot of these guys out there. He just can't get everyone out there.
Sam, we got to go. You're the man. I'll see you at the United Center February the 14th. That's Valentine's Day. We can have dinner.
All right, Valentine's Day. Bring me candies. Yeah.
Oh, he's got a heart-shaped box in the car for you already, Sam.
Sam, I'll be his Valentine.
Oh, you'll be his Denzel Valentine.
Sam, you're the best. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks.
SamSmithBulls.com. Love him.